Tereo Ererangi o Te Mania. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora and hello, 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 my fabulous friends. Welcome to the all-new, totally exciting season of Chloe Dilly Seeking Talents. I am your host, Chloe Dilly, and I'm back older, wiser, and more thrilled than ever to showcase the most amazing talents and inspiring stories from all around. This season is going to be an absolute blast. We're talking epic talents, heartwarming journeys, and maybe a few surprises along the way. Whether you're here to be inspired, entertained, or just have some fun, you're in the right place. So, grab your headphones, turn up the volume, and get ready to smile, laugh, and maybe even dance a little. Because this is Chloe Dilly Seeking Talents. Let's make some magic together.
Kia ora koutou and welcome. Welcome to something very special. Today is not a regular episode of Chloe Dilly Seeking Talents. Today, we are doing something I have been dreaming about for a long time. We are going back through two extraordinary years of conversations, performances, laughter, and moments of pure, undeniable magic. We are revisiting some of the voices and stories that have stayed with me, and I know from your messages and support with you as well, long after the microphone was switched off. This is the first episode of our Best Of series, three episodes, each one a love letter to the guests who made this show what it is. And I want you to know, choosing who to include in these episodes was genuinely one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. Because every single person who has sat across from me has given something real, something generous, something irreplaceable. Every conversation has mattered, every story has counted. But there were moments, and you will remember them when you hear them again, that stopped time. Moments where something was said, or sung, or shared that made you feel less alone in the world. And that is what today is about. In this first episode, we revisit some of the conversations that truly started something. The guests whose stories opened the door to everything the show has become. These are the stories that started it all. I hope they move you as much today as they did for me the first time. I hope they remind you why stories matter. And I hope they remind you, as they always remind me, that extraordinary people are everywhere. You just have to go looking. Let's go, let's remember, let's celebrate. Welcome to episode one of the Best Of for Chloe Dilly Seeking Talents.
From the smallest towns to the biggest cities, and from the youngest tamariki to our most experienced kaumatua. He is clever, talented, funny, a proud dad, and a massive fan of sausage rolls. From Parliament to our classrooms, from natural disasters to community events, he stands beside everyday New Zealanders and inspires people of all ages, including me, to speak up, dream big, and to do what is right. He is the former Prime Minister of Aotearoa New Zealand. Many of us also call him Chippy, the leader who rolls up his sleeves when times get tough. Please join me in giving the warmest welcome to someone I admire so, so much. The one and only Honourable Chris Hipkins. Kia ora and welcome, Mr. Hipkins.
Thank you. It's great to talk to you and good on you for doing this.
Thank you. This is a show for talents of all sorts, and we already know you are an awesome politician. But we've also heard that you have some pretty epic green fingers. What do you love the most about growing in your garden?
I like just getting out and about and planting something and watching it grow from nothing into something that you can eat. So I really like to grow my own food. So I grow rhubarb really, really well, largely because rhubarb tends to look after itself if you neglect it. So it grows really well in my garden. Rhubarb is a great vegetable to grow if you want to neglect what you're growing. But I also try and grow strawberries, tomatoes, lots of different herbs because I like to be able to cook with herbs. And it's really satisfying to go into the kitchen and cook with something that you've grown from nothing.
What made you decide to go into politics and want to make a difference?
Because I grew up with an appreciation that not all of the kids had the same opportunities in life that I had. Yes. And I don't think that's fair. I think we should make sure that our society is equal as possible. And that doesn't mean that everybody gets the same outcome. You know, different people are going to make different choices and they're going to prioritize different things in their life. And that's great because, you know, that's what life should be about. But people should at least have access to the same opportunities.
Why do you think it is so important for young people to speak up and be a part of political discussions?
Ultimately, the decisions that we make in politics affect the future of everybody. Yeah. And of course, they affect the futures of young people more because they're going to be around for longer than the people who are making the decisions. So I think it's really important that young people exercise their voice and basically let decision makers know what they think is important and what they think the future of the country should look like.
What would you say to a young person who feels their voice doesn't matter in politics?
I would say that that's exactly what the people who have the most power want you to think, because, you know, they would rather that young people didn't participate in politics because then their power and their control gets increased as a result of that. And I would say that actually young people's voices do matter. And the vote of a young person, for example, is worth the same as the vote of an old person. And so it's really important, I think, that young people do get engaged in politics and do participate. Voting turnout, for example, amongst younger New Zealanders is a lot lower than it is for older New Zealanders. And that ultimately means that older New Zealanders have more sway over the political system than younger New Zealanders do. But young Kiwis can change that.
Yes.
And they can change that by showing up to vote.
What do you think makes a great leader today?
I think a sense of perspective. So, you know, I think leadership sometimes is about seeing the bigger picture and not always doing the thing that's immediately in front of you in the way that people might expect, but actually looking at how all the pieces fit together and making sure that the decisions that you're making are based on a good principled vision for the future.
Yes, yeah. What do you think the most important issues are for young people to focus on in the next election?
I think, you know, young people's voices in the election often bring up things like child poverty, like climate change, like education. And I think sometimes without young people's voices in those debates, we would actually hear a lot less about those issues. So the issues that really affect the future, I think, are ones that young people should be really engaged in, because ultimately we're talking about the world, the country, the planet that you know, and the next generation are going to be inheriting. So it's important they have a voice in all of the decisions around that.
Do you think that the voting age in New Zealand should be lowered? Why or why not?
Yeah, I do. I support lowering the voting age to 16. Obviously, I don't support lowering the voting age to zero. You know, I think that you do need to at least know what you're voting on when you get to that point. But I've met 16 and 17-year-olds who are highly engaged in politics, who are more than capable of making an informed decision. And I meet plenty of adults who are not either of those things. So, I have no qualms with saying that I think 16 and 17-year-olds do deserve the opportunity to have a say in the future by way of a vote.
How can we engage more young people into politics and in Parliament?
Things like the Youth Parliament are great, but we've also got to look at different ways of decision-making as well. So I'm currently looking at things like citizens' assemblies, for example, where young people could have more of a voice. I think we need to change the way Parliament operates so that young people do have more of a voice, because even whether young people are voting or not, the decisions that we make as politicians have a direct impact on them. So I think we as politicians need to find new ways of making sure that we're hearing that voice of young people.
When things get challenging in leadership, what do you tell yourself to stay motivated?
I think you always have to look to the future. And I tend to look back at history and I look at some of the incredible things that other leaders have gone through over time and I think about, well, you know, it could be worse. I could be one of them. You know, everything passes. Everything, you know, you get some rough patches, but tomorrow there are new opportunities. There's a better future to look forward to if we make good decisions. So when things are a bit bumpy, you've always got to lift yourself up a bit and look to the future. That's what keeps you going.
Do you have any advice for young people who feel discouraged when things don't go as to plan?
Absolutely. And I think one of the most important lessons all of us can learn in life, and some people learn it quicker than others, is you can only control what you can actually control. And there's a lot of things that are outside of your control. And once you realize the difference, actually your life becomes a lot less stressful. Once you realize that you can't control the actions of other people, you can only control how you respond to that, then actually life actually becomes a lot more livable. If you're always worried about what other people are doing or saying about you or the impact that they're having on your life, you can't always control those things. And so if you're spending all your time worrying about those, you're worrying about stuff that you can't really do anything about. So worry about the things that you can control and the things that you can change. Life's going to throw all sorts of challenges at you. And that's part of the exciting thing of life. Now, I read a book recently called The Obstacle is the Way. And it was basically all about the fact that life's not supposed to go in a nice, neat, straight line where everything falls into place exactly as you might have imagined. It's the obstacles that you encounter along the way that make life what it is. That's what make life worth living. It's how you learn. It's how you grow. And if you embrace that, life's going to be great.
What does perseverance mean to you, not just as a politician, but as a person?
I think it means keeping a sense of perspective and not giving up. You know, if you make a mistake, keep going. Mistakes are how we learn. Don't do the same thing all over again if you've just made a mistake. Obviously, learn from the mistake. But that's what perseverance is about. It's about not being deterred, not giving up. Doing things differently the second time. And if that doesn't work, do it the third time and do it differently again until you get it right. The people who do that are the people who have the most successful lives. If you look at some of the world's most famous people, you know, who have done amazing things, they've often had a disastrous start. You know, some of our most successful business people went broke multiple times before they finally succeeded. You know, some of our great political leaders have often failed before they've succeeded. So perseverance means not giving up.
Lots of young people care deeply about climate change. What role do you think we can play in leading real change?
I think young people can certainly demonstrate that there are different ways of doing things. There are ways to live more sustainably that don't need to be miserable. You know, they don't need to lower our quality of life. In fact, they can increase our quality of life. So I think young people should continue to be a voice for the planet. And I think that we've seen some real leadership from younger New Zealanders and actually younger people all around the world in recent times on issues like climate change. And we do need to see more of that. But also, there are just little things you can do every day that show you can lead by example and you can show that, you know, we can live more sustainable lives.
Do you think our government is listening enough to the youth voices calling for action on climate?
No, I don't. And I think that young people have a right to feel angry about that. Ultimately, we're extending the planet beyond its means. You know, we can't keep living the way that we are. We need to take climate change seriously. I think political leaders in New Zealand and around the world all too easily think that's a problem for another day, that's a problem for the future. Well, the future is now. And actually, we need to take much more concrete action now if we're going to avoid a climate catastrophe in the fairly near future.
What has inspired you the most about the way that young people speak up about the environment and the future?
I think one of the things that I love about interacting with young people wherever I go is that they're pretty free with their views. And I think that's really important. Sometimes when you're interacting with people who have been around a bit longer, they tend to take a long time to get to their point. Whereas I find with many of the young people I engage with, they go straight to the point. They go straight to the bit that matters. And as a politician, I really appreciate that because it means I know exactly what they want, what they're concerned about, and what's important to them. I think if everybody did that, politics would actually be easier, not harder.
You helped create the Apprenticeship Boost Program. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so we established the Apprenticeship Boost so that young people who were studying or, you know, training for things like being electricians, builders, plumbers, and so on, actually get a better shot at succeeding in that area. We saw the number of people doing apprenticeships dropping off quite steadily. So we put the apprenticeship boost in, which means that their employers are now being subsidized to, you know, just help with their wages. And that means that more people can go into apprenticeships. And that's going to be better for us all in the long term because we need more, you know, builders, plumbers, electricians, and so on.
Why is funding free, healthy school lunches in schools so important?
As Minister of Education, I saw firsthand what happens in schools when kids show up without food. You get more behavioural issues in the classroom. Those kids aren't learning. And it's not that they're naughty kids either. It's just that they're hungry. Whereas if you feed them, then actually they can focus on what they're supposed to do at school, which is learning and growing. If they're hungry all of the time, they're not going to be doing those things. So I think the Free and Healthy Lunches program is just such a step forward. I hope that eventually the government's going to back down from this mass-produced system that they've put in place where the healthy bit's gone and the reliability of the meal's gone and the meals are smaller and not very good, and go back to something that actually gives food to kids in the way that they deserve to get it.
If you weren't in politics, what job might you be doing today?
To be honest, I've never really thought about that in the time that I've been in politics, because one of my philosophies in life is you take the opportunities that are in front of you. And if you're always looking over your shoulder thinking, what if I was doing that? What if I'd done that? What if I'd done this differently? What if I was doing that job instead? Then you're not giving everything you've got to the job that you've got now. And so one day in the future, you know, I might have a life outside of politics. But for now, while I'm in politics, I don't really spend any time thinking about that, because that would mean that I'm not giving my all to what I think is a pretty important job.
This show is made at Plains Media in Ototake, a place where all people of all ages and backgrounds create content supported by New Zealand On Air. Why do you think community access media is important?
I remember as a kid going on Access Radio here in Wellington and doing a one-off show on Access Radio. It was such an amazing experience for me, because back then broadcasting was such a mysterious thing. You know, you heard somebody on the radio, you watched them on TV, but you really never got to see how any of it was made. Nowadays, you can see how it's made quite easily. You can look it up on YouTube or whatever. None of that existed when I was a kid. And so it was pretty exciting. But I think the thing about community radio and things like community access radio is it gives everybody the chance to have a voice. And it gives communities a chance to air perspectives and views that might not otherwise make it out there. And so I think, you know, community access radio, as an example, can bring people together in a way that I think is really special.
You're a well-known fan of sausage rolls. After travelling across New Zealand, where do you think they taste the best?
Oh, that's an interesting question. You know, like, I'm not snobbish about sausage rolls. I quite enjoy them wherever I've been around the country. Now and then, though, I'm quite happy to give them a miss, because I've eaten quite a lot of them in the last little while. And while I enjoy a good sausage roll, not every day.
Now it's time for the fun and silly questions that I ask every single one of my guests. What is the closest thing to magic that you have ever seen or experienced?
Gosh, that's an interesting question. You know, when I think about that, I think about the birth of my two kids, and I just think that that's pretty much like magic. You know, they go from nothing to being these fully fledged human beings, and that is like magic.
What is the grossest thing that you can think of?
Oh, goodness me. Changing the kids' nappies. You know, there were some fairly gross moments in there.
Would you rather give up music for 1 year or never eat sausage rolls again?
I'd never give up music. I think music is just so important to life's vibrancy and colour, and I'd never want to give up music. I'd miss sausage rolls, but I think music's more important.
What is your favourite joke or something that always makes you laugh?
I'm not very good at jokes. I tell my kids dad jokes and they just kind of shrug and run into the other room. So I'm not going to attempt to tell any jokes here. Some of the TV shows that I've watched over the years always, you know, make me smile. But the thing that probably makes me laugh most is, you know, having good time with some of my friends, because we get together and we just laugh about life, and that's really important.
SpongeBob or The Simpsons?
Oh, definitely The Simpsons. Simpsons is such a social commentary. And if you watch it, you know, as I have, I mean, Simpsons came out when I was a kid and it's still going now. It just provided such an ongoing commentary about the way we live and, you know, various social issues that I think The Simpsons is inspired, really.
What advice would you give to your 10-year-old self now?
Oh, interesting question. probably lighten up a little bit. You know, just live life and just always be willing to give something a go and never be afraid of failure, never be afraid of not succeeding at something, because it's how you learn. And the more things you try and the more you're willing to fail at things, then the more successful you're actually going to be. If you never try, you never learn, and you never do anything interesting. So my advice to myself at 10 would be just give things a go and don't worry too much if it doesn't pan out. Just keep going.
What's something silly that you believed as a kid?
I tell you what, when I was quite young, I remember being on the beach and on the mud flats on the beach, and I was wandering around, and this little tiny crab came out of a hole in the mud. And for some time after that, I always thought that muddy holes were full of crabs. And so I was always terrified of muddy holes. I learned that that's not the case. But at the time, when I was just wee tiny kid, holes were very scary.
Yeah. Do you play an instrument, or do you speak any other languages? And if not, what ones would you like to learn?
I don't play any instruments. I am working on my Te Reo Māori and my greetings in Te Reo Māori, because I think that I never had the opportunity to learn that at school, and so I've been trying to learn that as an adult. It's a lot harder when you're an adult, particularly when you're very busy like I am in this job. But I think it's great that kids in school now are getting the chance to learn Māori from a much younger age than I did. If I was going to learn an instrument, I think I'd probably like to learn the guitar. Because it's such a versatile instrument. You can do so much with it, and you can take it with you wherever you go.
Before we finish, would you like to wish something to our listeners?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. Yes, I think I would. So what would I wish to your listeners? Well, I think you should always wish people good health, because, you know, that's important to all of us. But perhaps at a more philosophical level, can I wish everybody that you continue to have good friends who you disagree with? Because I think having friends that you disagree with make you better as a person.
Today, we have an incredible guest who shines inside and out, literally. She is strong, stylish, and she is seriously one of the coolest people I've ever met. She's a spray tanning guru, a makeup artist, a bodybuilder, and a DIY queen who even renovated her home with her dad. Please welcome the amazing Christy Baker.
Thank you, thank you.
Christy, can you tell us a little about yourself and what do you do?
I am 36 and I'm a stay-at-home mum at the moment. I have a 3-year-old son and then a 13-year-old stepson who I raise. And I spray tan and do makeup. Well, when I was in my early 20s, I'd sort of followed a lot of that kind of industry on YouTube, because Instagram wasn't really a big thing then. And I so desperately was I want to be a bodybuilder. I was good at being strong. It sounds like weird, but when you're a bit more solid, you are strong naturally, regardless. You know, it's just in you. And I was always I'm going to be if I'm going to be chubby, I'm going to be strong. So I just went full into the gym. I was at university at 23, and I really struggled to kind of crack the bodybuilding then, because I didn't really have much guidance and I didn't know how to pack my meals for school. It cost a lot of money to eat as a bodybuilder, and I was just sort of, I could do the gym because that's easy, but the eating was the hard part. And I just kind of was I obviously just can't quite get it, but I wanted it. Yeah, so that's where it kind of started in my early 20s. So it was just trying to dip in the toes, and it was all in the back of the mind, but just couldn't quite get the food stuff. Well, you know, it's quite expensive, so
yeah.
Yeah.
What inspired you to even start lifting weights? Was there a light bulb moment?
Kind of. I used to do it when I'd left school, because my mum worked in a doctor's clinic that also had a gym. So I'd go there and just hang out. And do the gym. But then when I was at uni around the 22, 23, I was watching the Commonwealth Games, and I was watching them doing discus and shot put, and I was that doesn't look that hard, which is I'm sure it is. But in my mind, I was I could do that. I should be at the gym. I look like them. Why can't I? Surely I could do stuff like that. But I just pushed it into the gym. I didn't really do any specific sports like discus or anything, but for some reason, that just something about watching those games, I was I'm built for this. I should be doing weights or sport, because I, I can do it. And now it just became like not kind of like an obsession, but it is like it's something for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it's like your own, you know, you get the rewards of your effort. And I was seeing that. I was like, oh, this is actually quite fun.
You said that you're not a professional bodybuilder yet, but what's a pro card and how does someone earn it?
So when with bodybuilding, you just all compete as amateurs on a regional level. Say like the South Islands, which is what I compete in. The federation I compete in is called IFBB, which is the International Federation of Bodybuilding, which is like the main, like the Olympia is like the Olympics of bodybuilding. So you do a local show and then you automatically get into the national show. You can't just do the nationals, you've got to do obviously a regional. If you win your category in that show, the Auckland Nationals show, then you get, you're like the best of whoever's there, so you are now professional, which means that you no longer can't compete now in those other shows because you're that next level up. But unfortunately in New Zealand, there's no shows for professional athletes. They do one at the end of the year, just usually for the men, like big bodybuilders, but not the figure girls or bikini and all the other bits. So if I was to push it and become a professional bodybuilder, that would cost, I would only be able to ever compete overseas. And that is like a lot of money, you know, flights and accommodation and registrations for shows. And the caliber, once you are a professional bodybuilder, there's a different look. Like they are big girls, you know, and that's when people start looking at like enhancements to their bodies to look a certain way. And I'm like, I just like bodybuilding for fun. I actually think today I was like, I think I might take this year off because when I had my son at the end of 2021, he was 5 months old and then I signed up to a nutritionist to lose some weight and I lost 20 kilos and then I was like, in 5 months, and I was like, whoa, awesome. And then I'd always watched my bikini shows on my treadmill. That was my motivation. And then I took a couple of months off and I was like, no, I'm going to come back. I'm going to, like, do a bodybuilding show. And then I did, a bikini show. So that was, like, 1 year of, like, dieting for normal. And I did a bikini show, which was a lot of work. And then decided, no, I'm better suited to figure division, which is the bigger shoulders, more muscular. So it was another year of push, push, push. And now I'm kind of like, oh, it is taking its toll of, like, the ups and downs. Like it's like cool, normal life for 6 months, diet, you know, and then 6 months diet. And like, you know, I have the children, I'm starting to see like, oh goodness, Nash will be at school soon. I kind of want to just maybe spend this year with the family and then come back into it next year refreshed and give my body a bit of a rest and then go, right, let's go. Yeah.
What's your favorite part about being a bodybuilder and how has it changed your life?
Oh, I really enjoy the feeling of that I have created my body. You'd look at me at the gym and you would know that I work hard.
Yes.
And I think that's something that you can't take away from an athlete, is like everything that I have created on my body is due to very hard work, and that makes me feel proud. And a lot of people, I do notice, especially if I lose a little bit of body fat and then my muscles are more on display, I can really start to see them looking at me, you know, whether it's quite obviously or it's like this sly little like, oh, well, that's heavy, or she's doing, you know. And sometimes if I'm in a bad mood, I just get, oh, don't look at me, you know. But other times I'm like, yeah, I am an athlete, and it makes me feel very proud that I am. I've done that on my own. And then, but with the actual bodybuilding, I love the show. I love the spray tan and I love the makeup and I love the hair extensions. So, and so for me, that's like the fun part at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're also a makeup artist. How did it start and what do you love most about it?
Oh, I started back in Ashburton assisting another makeup artist. So when she'd have weddings, I would tag along and help prep everybody and get them ready so then she could come in and do the majority at the end or whatever it would be. And then I worked at, when I was at university back up in Christchurch, I worked at Mecca, in the Valentine's for 2 years and did all the formal girls on Saturdays. And it was so much fun. It's just, it's you spend an hour with somebody, learning about somebody and making them feel their most beautiful, you know, regardless of what their event is. And it's just a really nice way to kind of stay in my creative realm, but also have that connection with another person. Obviously, since I'm like not out about as much as a stay-at-home mum, it's like helping somebody find beauty in themselves again, which is like, oh, it's really rewarding.
From glam to tan, you run Christy Page Sunless. Tell us more about spray tanning. What got you into that glowing business?
I just love spray tanning because I am pale. So I've always been someone who would wear fake tan. And when I decided to not return back to work, which I was in the construction industry as a sales rep, and I was trying to find something that I could do at home to still make money that was low overheads and time. And my hairdresser was like, just borrow my spray tan setup and you can just practice on all your friends. So that's what I did. I borrowed her gun and her tent and got all my friends over to, you know, practice and buy the solution. And because I just really enjoy it, because it's kind of like makeup, a little bit more permanent, but not permanent. So obviously it washes off, but it's a nice way to pick me up for somebody. You just, a 20-minute appointment, it's not permanent, and people are just so happy with, you know, seeing themselves in the mirror afterwards going, oh, I feel 5 kilos lighter, or I just feel, like, healthy again. And I'm like, it brings me such joy to know that I can provide a service to someone that will make them feel so beautiful. Yeah.
What's the biggest myth people have about spray tans?
That everyone will look like Donald Trump. So a lot of people go, I don't want to look like a Dorito. Oh, I don't want to look orange. And some of the old ways were probably quite like that. But the solutions have changed now, and there's all sorts of different ones for everyone's skin tone. So, yeah, we definitely avoid the Dorito colours.
What does beauty mean to you? And do you think beauty has more to do with confidence than appearance?
Very much so. I think, I guess now that I'm older, I was probably insecure, you know, a lot growing up. I was always a tomboy. I always felt not very naturally pretty, hence why I have like probably my bleached hair and my big lips and rah, 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 and spray tan, probably hide behind that a little bit. But now that I have seen so many, this is going to sound a little bit risque, but obviously spray tan, so many women, all different shapes and sizes, and seeing who will have the most confidence compared to someone who, you know, might have a model body, but they might be so full of insecurities. And it makes me so sad because I'm like, wow, you're like on paper perfect, you know, but those people will still have their hang-ups. So I think the confidence really is the number one. I always say fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
Just own it. No one cares. Like, no one's really thinking that much of you. So just be what you want, even if it just feels like you're pretending. No one knows you're pretending, so it only feels uncomfortable. But, yeah, the makeup side of things is always fun, but it's usually about bringing to light that person's natural confidence anyway, bringing it out.
You even helped renovate your own home with your dad. That's amazing. Do you have your favourite DIY memory from that time?
Oh, well, it was a lot. I had to live in the house while renovating just because I couldn't afford to live anywhere else. I don't know if it's a favourite memory, but it's a core memory. Half of the house was like the walls, you know, one end's the bedrooms and the other end's like the living room and kitchen. And the living room and kitchen end, all the exterior walls were down, and I only had building paper as part of my like walls. And winter, so I had to sleep. Yeah, I would sleep in my room at the other end of the house, wearing a beanie and gloves, and had to, you know, try and close the doors because I could just hear the building paper rattling, rattling, rattling in the wind. But it was, I just knew that I didn't have a choice. I had nowhere else to live, and it was my home, so I knew that it was just short term, you know, that I would be doing this just for a little bit until we get through the next stages. But yeah, I definitely remember that. Oh wow, I actually did do that, and it was an experience.
What has bodybuilding taught you about discipline and body confidence?
Oh, discipline is very important to me. I think it's almost not the discipline, because I definitely eat my meals, my bodybuilding meals, but I also love a biscuit here and there. You know, I go to, you know, Alpha Group and I enjoy the dessert because I haven't got a show, you know, I haven't started yet. So I enjoy the dessert, but it mentally keeps me on track with the busy life that I lead. It's like, okay, well, I know my lunch is always in the fridge. Okay, I know my breakfast is always in the cupboard. Okay, so the routine, it's like with when people raise children, children just need routine. And adults need routine. Like, we need to know, like, what we're going to have for dinner, or the confidence thing, yeah, definitely has come later in life because I so desperately wanted to be a small girl, but I am not built for being a small girl. And it literally only took me 2 years ago to just go, I'm a figure girl. I'm not a bikini athlete. I'm not built like those little girls. I am built differently. Just lean into it and just enjoy it. But it takes, that took years, you know, because I wanted to be small finally. I wanted to be small. Why can't I stay small? But I think as soon as we realise what our bodies are, life is a lot better.
Yeah.
Don't fight what we haven't got, you know.
You may know him from bands like Black Boy Peaches and now from the super cool Lounge Dogs. Please welcome to the microphone Hamish Miffin.
Hey, Chloe.
Hamish, when did you first figure out you had such a passion for music and singing?
Oh, I remember very clearly. It was after I watched the Walk the Line movie, which is the story about Johnny Cash. Yeah, and so my dad took me to see the movie and I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. I came home and I wrote my first song.
What was the first instrument that you've ever picked up?
I think every child in New Zealand first picks up the recorder. I don't know if that's a real instrument, but when you're five, you're given one in class and you have a wee toot. So, yeah, I guess that's the first instrument.
What was your first gig ever? Just you, or were you already part of a band?
I sang in choirs when I was at primary school. And so I guess first gig, first performance, you know, did some stuff in choirs. And there's a lady back in the day when I was at primary school called Susan Prentice, and she was going around New Zealand singing stuff, and she'd have kind of kids' choirs come in. And me and this other girl got chosen to do this kind of like duet with Susan Prentice when I was like, I don't know, it must have been 7 or 8 or 9. I can't remember exactly. So maybe that was the first time, yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about your very first band. Who were your partners in music back then?
Oh, yeah, cool. So when I was, I think I was 14, I played in an Irish Celtic band, and it was formed at my school, Otago Boys High School, and two mates, Matt Carradice and Matt Dent, they were both very good violinists. And I was this, I played the acoustic guitar. I like to say I hacked away. I was like a rhythm guitarist. Anyway, their guitarist quit, and my mate Matt Dent came and found me at lunchtime. He said, come and join, we need another guitarist. So they invited me in. And, we were called A Native. We played Irish music. It was very fun.
Where was your first ever live show? And do you still remember how you felt?
First ever live show. So I used to play in pubs. I don't know if that's a show so much as like a
performance.
Yeah, performance, yeah. But I was about 15, I think we got our first pub gig at a place called The Crack. And it was this, in Dunedin in the Octagon, there's this Irish bar. It's like this wee hole and it's dark wood and there's a fireplace in the corner and the floor's a bit sticky from all the spilt drinks. We used to play there every Thursday night when I was 15, 16, 17.
Yeah, how did Lounge Dogs come together and where did you meet the crew?
Yeah, so Lounge Dogs is the Christchurch band that pulled together when I moved up here. And it's kind of a longish story, but I worked with a mate of mine called Charlie, and she invited me to play some music with her husband, who is a bass player, very, very good bass player, Leighton. And we were jamming at their place, and they said, oh, maybe we should just get a drummer. And so Charlie goes, oh, I know this guy called Chris. And Chris came in and we played and jammed a bit. And there's also a dog called Stark. And Stark used to join in the band practices in the lounge and knock all our drinks over with his massive tail. He's like a, I don't know, like a German Shepherd size. But he's a big, goofy, happy dog, and he just wanted to play music with us. So that's where the name Lounge Dogs came from. But me and Chris started writing music together, and eventually we started doing that at his house. He also had a dog at his house called Jeff, and he's completely deaf. Oh. And he sits in band practice. He doesn't hear a single thing. But, yeah, we pulled in a few friends, a bass player called Sam and a keyboardist called Pete. And that's how we started. We just decided that our songs were cool and we wanted to record them.
Yeah. Who's currently rocking in it with you in Lounge Dogs?
Yeah, so we've got Chris on drums, Sam on bass guitar, original keyboardist Pete went overseas, unfortunately, but we have just found a new guitarist called Tony. So he's just recently joined and he's writing some very cool guitar parts for our songs. And then me, yeah, Hamish.
Yeah. If you had to describe your band's music in three words, what would they be?
Ooh. I should have read these questions before I came. three words. Smooth indie rock.
Yeah. Are you guys open to trying different sounds, like bringing in new instruments or collaborations?
Yeah, always open to trying to find new music and new sounds. I think that was the fun part about playing with like a keyboardist as well as guitarists. You know, you kind of get a different feel, a different vibe from the music. And collaboration, you know, working with people, that's how you find special things. I think, you know, when you do it by yourself, I think it's quite easy to get lost in your own head. But when you work with other people, you kind of bounce off each other and there's a lot more energy comes out of it.
What inspires your music the most, people, moments, or adventures?
Ooh, I think people. Like, I love observing people. A lot of the songs that I've written are kind of like stories which aren't necessarily about me as the singer, but they're kind of like about these observations of kind of how people behave in relationships and stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, people probably.
Is there someone in your life who's your biggest muse?
Like musically?
Yeah, just anything.
Yep. Great question. Someone in my life who's probably my wife. Yeah.
Yeah. You were part of Black Boy Peaches. What kind of vibe did he all have back then?
Yeah, so I was in Black Boy Peaches with my brother Tom, and started that when I was 19, and we were definitely like a indie pop rock band, I guess. So big guitars, big synths, massive drums, yeah, a little bit more party.
Songs like Other Side, what were you hoping fans would feel when they listened?
Great question. That's so Other Side is quite upbeat. It's kind of quite a positive rock song. I guess want people to feel like when they listen to the music, it gives them energy. And, you know, there's enough, sometimes there's not enough positive energy, which isn't like, and I like, look, I don't mind a pop song every now and then, but you don't want positive energy, which is kind of just cheesy and lame. So I wanted to write a rock song, which was like uplifting as well as kind of a bit crunchy. I don't know if that makes sense, but yeah.
Thinking back to earlier songs, any favourites you may wish to remix now?
Oh, good question. We have this one song from Black Boy Peaches from years and years ago called Slasher, and it just had this really great synth riff in it, and I think the riff will live on forever in my head. So if someone remixed that, I'm pretty sure it could be a banger.
We can do that. You performed at that awesome event in Christchurch. What was that experience like?
Oh, yeah. So we played at the City to Surf event. Our City to Surf is so cool. Like, it's just 10,000 people starting at one part of the city and walking or running to the next part. So it finished out at Rafferty Domain in New Brighton, and it's just a hugely positive event. And we were playing on a truck at the end, and it was a sunny day, and there's about 5,000 people just hanging around. So yeah, cool. I love playing outside. Like, it's one of my favorite places to play music. So yeah, that was very cool. Really grateful for the City to Surf people who invited us along to play. Yeah.
If you could jam with any world famous band or artist, who would you pick?
Oh, to jam with. Some people just have like incredible talent. I think I'm going to say two deceased people. Jeff Buckley is one. Now he was like a singer, guitarist, songwriter, and he just was out of this world talented. But then Chris Cornell from Audioslave. Unfortunately, both of them have passed away, but just raw talent. I think it'd be so fun to do stuff with people that just have, they just ooze kind of like skill and energy, yeah.
Dream venue time. Where would you love to play a massive gig one day?
Ooh, big gigs. Why don't we be the first show to play at the New Christchurch, whatever you call that indoor...
Town hall?
No, you know, the one, the building down here, the big sports with the roof thing.
Christchurch Arena.
Is it called the arena?
The football stadium thing.
I'm sure they're going to have music there. But yeah. I think, yeah, so what is that called? It's
the stadium.
The stadium, that's right. Yeah, the Christchurch Stadium. Yeah. That would be a cool gig because, firstly, it would be easy to get parking. Yeah. And secondly, it looks very fun. So.
Yeah. How does a Lounge Dog song get born? Music first or lyrics first?
Ooh, yeah, so mostly music first. Mm. I think the feeling of a song for me usually starts with something interesting musically, either on the guitar or the piano. And so when that exists, I feel like something can happen. I have done it in reverse before, but I feel like I messed it up when I did lyrics first, because there's so much like intonation and rhythm that comes from the lyrics that need to fit in to the music, and I'm just probably more practiced at doing it with music first.
Now let's listen to one of the latest songs of Hamish's group, The Lounge Dogs. The song is Look At It My Way.
Thank you.
That right there is why I do this. Do you feel that? That warmth in your chest? That quiet kind of hope that settles in when you've been reminded that the world is full of remarkable people doing remarkable things, often without recognition or without enough noise being made about them? That feeling is exactly what Chloe Dilley Seeking Talents has always been about. Three stories, three completely different lives, and yet somehow, when you sit with all three of them in one episode, you see the same thing. You see people who choose to show up, who choose to create, who choose to serve, who choose, against every easier option, to care deeply. I am so grateful to every guest who has trusted me with their story, and I'm so grateful to you. Yes, you listening right now, for showing up for this show, for sharing these episodes, for sharing your messages, and for reminding me that seeking talent is never, ever a waste of time. This is only the beginning of our Best Of series. Episode 2 is coming in a couple of weeks, and I promise you, it is just as beautiful, just as surprising, and just as full of the kind of people who make you proud to be alive in the same world as them. Until then, ka kite anō everyone. Keep seeking, keep believing, and keep being kind to each other. This was episode 1 of the Best Of series of Chloe Dilley Seeking Talents.
That's the show, everybody. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this show and want to hear more, head over to plains.org.nz for past episodes. You can also subscribe on Spotify and Apple Podcasts to get the new episodes delivered right to you. Do you have a talent you'd like to share? I'd love to talk to you. Just email info@plains.org.nz to get in touch. Keep working on your talents. You are amazing. Until next time, bye!